You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. We're taking a break over the next few weeks, so we're going to play you some of our favourite stories over the summertime. We'll be back with brand new episodes in February.
I'm Tilly. I'm the social media producer for All the Best, coming to you right now from my bed where I've been spending my downtime this summer watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer all the way through for the second time. Sometimes I think you need that second viewing for something to really hit, which is certainly the case for the people in this story. This one's from Read to Me, which is a live storytelling and comic book night that we're huge fans of at All the Best. I just think this is such a funny story, and Sapphire Sheedy delivers it perfectly. This is Secret Theatre Secret.
There's a language warning for this next story.
I was brought up in country Queensland. To give you an idea of like how country I was brought up with a stepdad who would say things like "cover" and "struth." And his like kind of style of like living was to go camping for 5 weeks straight, with the concept of camping being like throwing a tarp over the rocks and calling the stars as our blanket, because like he was a poet and it's so amazing. This had also meant while other kids were experiencing the art and culture that was like performance art, we were busy tough muttering it and like avoiding cow patties. Anyway, fast forward like many years later to the lead up of my 17th birthday, now living in Sydney, city slicker. I overheard on the TV that Mary Poppins was playing in Sydney and I had to go. Being a country bumpkin, I'd never seen a musical even, or like even a play before. So like, now was the time. It's gonna rule. I wanted to be like pretty cultured, kind of like a really good deli meat kind of culture. Anyway, so my parents picked up on this like super like really subtle vibe, and gifted me 2 tickets to go see the musical, and I was a little excited. But then to later find out that my like then girlfriend wasn't able to take the night off work, and being not from the city, going from Manly to the city was a huge deal. It was like, what a trip. So we were a little bit bummed out and I didn't want to go by myself. And my parents picked up on this very subtle vibe. And like the saints that they are, bought me a second set of tickets and I was so keen. Like I was gonna see my first ever musical and it was gonna be Mary Poppins. To make it even better, later that week, we found out that neither of us had to, like, work on the night, so we had 2 sets of tickets for 2 great nights at Mary Poppins! It was gonna be awesome! Anyway, so the night came, and I was very rags-to-riches kind of night. I felt like Anne Hathaway in Princess Diaries. Or Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman. Or Kim Kardashian after that debut blockbuster that she did. We got all dressed up and dolled up and we ferried over to the city from Manly, which for me at the time was an adventure in itself, like I said. We arrived at Capitol Theatre, which was like bustling with people in anticipation, and I was like getting so giddy, I was gonna see my first musical. We get inside and the lady like points us to our seat with her professional little light flasher thing. Now, like, what we had to do is just, like, maintain our really cool facade and wait patiently for the curtains to be drawn. The lights dim and the show begins. Anyway, sometimes later, the curtain closed and it was such a time and I felt on top of the world. There was music and there was dancing and I wanted to tell everybody to go see a musical. Anyway, we gathered our things and on our way out, like navigated through the crowds and bumped through and pushed and got to the doors, and on our final goodbye, the lady at the doors is like, "Keep your tickets for re-entry." And I was like, "What the fuck? No. There's way too many people in there. I'm not going back in. Whatever." So we sailed back over the ocean to Manly. Arrived back home to my sleepy stepmom who groggily comes out and is like, "How was your night?" And I was like, "It was freaking amazing. There was singing and there was dancing and there were spoonfuls of sugar. It was great. Everybody should go see musicals." But it ended like a little bit differently to the film, but I guess that's like creative freedom. So like, anyway. She was like, "Oh, so glad you enjoyed it. Do you think you'll see it tomorrow?" And I was like, "Super color friggin' heck yeah, I am." Anyway, the next day came, the height was less this time, because, you know, it wasn't my first musical rodeo. But nonetheless, it was still exciting. We get there amongst the crowd of fresh new faces beside ours. The lady at the door is probably like, back again, all right. Waited for the curtains to be drawn, and like the night before, there was singing and dancing and cheers and laughs and heartfelt moments. And the curtain closes and we have to come to the end of yet another great night of musicals. Man, and so yeah, we get ready to leave, and I noticed that the night before, the place was still bustling with people. Nobody seemed too urgent to leave. Maybe it was like a Marvel movie, and there was like credit scenes. I don't know. Someone here was like, there's end credit scenes. So I felt like tonight would be a good night to follow the crowd and see what was going on. And then my then girlfriend comes back from the bathroom, and I've gathered our things to go. And I hear a tune over the speakers, and then the request for everybody to take their seats again. And I was like, what the fuck? What? What's going on? So I planted my 17-year-old self back down in my seats. I was like, what was happening? So much excitement, so much adrenaline. The lights started to dim and the curtains drawn again. There was a second half! Oh, the half! No wonder the ending night was shit. Which now I can admit. Man, you thought the first half was powerful. You should have seen the second half. Who knew that there was two parts to musicals? Man, I guess a lot of people, but I'm from Queensland, whatever. The show went on and there was songs and dancing and laughing and cheers, but the cherry on the top, spoilers, if you didn't see the second half, they ended with Mary fucking Poppins flying over the crowd. Man, it was amazing. Anyway. So, you may not know this, but someone who has been to a musical and has experiences, stay for the second half, because there's a lot more where that came from, and people of the performing arts call that the intermission. So, it's my tip.
You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. We're taking a break over the next few weeks, so we're going to play you some of our favourite stories over the summertime. We'll be back with brand new episodes in February.
Hi, my name's Sarah Mashman. I am a supervising producer with All the Best. And I picked this next story looking forward because Gina Marie, who is the subject, is just fantastic. And it takes you to so many different places. It's a story about sport and a story about tennis. But it's also a story about life's challenges.
Gina Marie is pretty unique, just like her name.
It's all one word. My mother loved my name because she made it. You know, she wanted to call me Georgina or Red Jean. She was coming up with different things just to be different. But then she thought Georgina, they'll call her George. Well, she wasn't happy with me being George. So Regina, same. She thinks they'd call me Reg. So she came up with her own version, which no one really gets.
It's not a very common name.
No, it's nobody's called Gina Marie.
And on Friday evenings, Gina Marie hops on a tram during peak hour traffic. She then changes trams before arriving at her tennis club. Being from Melbourne, it often means she's sharing a ride with footy crowds or anyone else heading into the city for the night.
It's a very packed tram and I usually can't get to the driver, so I just have to ask people to let me know when I'm at my stop.
It can be a long journey, but it's all worth it because tennis is central to Gina Marie's life, but it hasn't always been that way.
The truth is, with regard to tennis, that is brand new. That is brand new in my life because I was not good at sport as a school child. And I was truly bullied because it was in the days of sink or swim. You know, the teacher says everyone play this game. And if you can't catch the ball, then the children don't want to play with you. I just couldn't catch it. It was just not going to happen. I'd miss it.
This hasn't stopped Gina Marie from playing sport. However, her tennis game is a bit different than your normal tennis game.
Oh, it's extremely different in regard to the ball, yet the rules are the same, except a few variations. The ball is a dense foam ball, and it has a bell in it.
Because Gina Marie is legally blind.
Let's say there's one other participant on the other side of the net and they're vision impaired. I have to speak to them so they know the ball's coming. So we have these words, ready, and the other participant says yes, and then I have 3 seconds to serve the ball and I say play. So they're already ready for it. But we're allowed to have the ball bounce so we can hear it. And in B2 category...
That's the category Gina Marie plays in.
I'm allowed 3 bounces before I send it back.
So I was amazed really at the skill, because it's one thing to be able to just hit the ball over, but, you know, finding it first is a whole nother
game. Really tricky. And we've scraped a lot of tennis rackets on the ground trying to find it.
Gina Marie hasn't always been legally blind. It was around 10 years ago that her vision started to deteriorate, but she doesn't like to dwell on that part of her life. She much prefers to keep her focus on looking forward.
The fact that I'm vision impaired, and I once was not vision impaired, I had to rethink, how am I going to wear this? And it came instantly. The thought was, go ahead, just go forward, don't dwell on it, don't hold it to you. I was told that it's a permanent condition, and I had to just straight away come to terms with this new name, legally blind. I was recommended to work with an orientation and mobility instructor. We went on a tram, which she taught me how to put my foot on the step and one on the ground, and ask the driver what number the tram is. So otherwise you could be on the wrong transport. So I've learned to do that. These are really big steps when you're not used to sort of speaking to the driver of a tram or anyone else for that matter. But it's called self-advocacy, and you really have to have a voice because it's one of your tools when your vision is poor.
Being adaptive and open to new experiences has helped Gina Marie transition into what she describes as her new life.
I'm very famous for someone walking past with their phone and not being able to see it, and they say hello into the phone. I always say hello. It's pretty embarrassing. I am interested in people. I love meeting people, so I often, especially on trams, because I don't really use a device on a tram, I just have all these funny little friends that I meet. That I don't know them. I may never see them again, but we can have these very in-depth conversations, which are very touching. But I think overall, what I find that human kindness, I can't say that I've met one person from anywhere in particular that has never offered friendship or help or assistance.
These days, Gina Marie is a bit of a star in the world of blind tennis, having represented Australia on the international stage in tournaments across the globe.
And so you've travelled to
Japan first, which we did in 2013, to see how they play. But it was quite funny because of the language. We had someone translating, but we missed a lot of information. There was just a lot of bowing and giving of presents. So it was going to have to be another way that we learned how to play, which was very much going down to Rod Laver Arena, which is where I played first, and just different coaches trying different things.
Did you receive any prizes? How did you place in these tournaments?
It's there on the shelf. It's my Fair Play trophy.
In her living room, the Fair Play trophy sits prominently on Gina Marie's shelf. It's a small silver urn crossed by two shiny tennis rackets.
It's a start for someone who never, ever was able to do sport to actually receive the trophy, which my team awarded me, because I had to play a consolation game with a blind deaf girl and she could only hear a high pitch. And of course, I wanted her to feel included, but she couldn't hear me say ready when you have to prepare to send the ball. So I had to go higher and higher with my voice before she could hear it. And in the end, I found because my voice dropped, I could only sing it. So I sang the words. And everybody had no idea what was going on because we were in the middle of a tournament. But when they all found out, they were deeply touched. And she beat me by 1 point. I feel that because I've been invited, and I feel like I've been invited into this world that was so closed from me, which is the world of sport, and that I just love it so much, and I'm very grateful that I can be there and I want to absorb as much as I can, even though I'm not the best player, but I'm the happiest. And I really would love to encourage others, because I've always thought if there had been another way to work with a ball, I would have been able to be included at school. If teachers were a little more creative, now that I know that there's all these other possibilities, I feel I'd love to share them. What I really want to say is it's everyone has a chance to rise above anything. It's a decision that can be helped by a counsellor or a special mentor, a person in your life that uplifts you. But mostly it has to come from within you. And when you have that moment, that little light bulb moment that says, just get on with it, don't look back, well, then you just go forward and embrace things like blind tennis that were never in your life.
You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story.
Hello, my name is Danny Stewart. I'm a community coordinator for All the Best, and when I was 3 years old, I was stung by a bee at the beach while building sandcastles. It hurt a lot. My mum told me that the bee was just protecting its queen, so I couldn't be that mad. The story you're about to hear is one of my all-time favourites because it's all about bees. I guarantee you'll learn something and set some facts straight that the bee movie got wrong. It's like a David Attenborough documentary, but better. This is Queen Bee by Alina Godwin.
I've never seen a bee out in the rain. Probably because it would only take one droplet to knock them out. They have an inbuilt GPS that allows them to travel up to 5 kilometres from their hive and still find their way back.
Please use the first exit at the sunflowers and continue north. Your queen is waiting. Please make sure all pollen is secure.
They communicate through smell and vibration, and when they are home in the hive, they are in complete darkness. Inside the hive, the bees do something called the waggle dance.
It's kind of very similar to a yin-yang symbol.
They use this dance to communicate about what's outside the hive. So, for example, flowers. The angle at which they point their butt indicates the direction of the flowers. The faster they shake it, the closer the flowers, and the slower they shake it, the further away. Bees use the waggle dance to communicate about all things outside the hive. So not just flowers, but also water and maybe even a new home.
So the bees will decide that, you know, they're quite happy, they're quite populous, they want to spread their genetics into the environment. And so instead of the queen just leaving and starting the beehive on her own, she'll take half the workers with her. So the old queen leaves, and they'll make a new queen. So it's a perpetual cycle of them splitting in half, kind of taking out half the colony.
To create a new queen, a female egg is selected by the worker bees and drowned in royal jelly.
And that will change the hormonal composition of the egg to turn into a queen.
After 16 days, the egg will hatch into a virgin queen.
The queen cell will then hatch, the virgin queen will come out. She'll go on mating flights. So she'll go outside for the next 2 weeks and mate with about 12 drones while they're flying.
The boy bees are called drones, and they hang out in drone congregation areas. And for anyone who lives in Sydney, there's actually one of these congregation areas at the University of Sydney.
Drones will go there and they'll wait for a virgin queen to fly by, because for some reason also the virgin queens know that this is where all the drones are.
They mate while flying.
The boys don't actually do any other work. Their one purpose in life is to mate with the virgin queen. They just kind of go outside and come back and eat a little and bumble around and, you know, have a chat to the girls, but they don't actually do any work. They don't forage, they don't clean, they don't do anything like that. They might provide a little bit of warmth, but the workers, the females, they do pretty much everything else. But once they've mated with her, their genitals fall off and they drop to the ground.
Oh my God.
The temperament and personality of bees in a hive will actually mimic that of the queen. So if you have a chill queen, you've got chill bees. And if you have an angry queen, you've got very angry bees.
You come across a beehive and it's super defensive. Like, you go in there and they're just constantly trying to defend their brood and stinging and just a little bit agitated. If you take away the old queen and replace her with a new queen who has, you know, been bred to be passive nature, then that nature of the whole beehive will change because they will take after her.
The bees don't seem to have much loyalty to their queen. And when she's gone, they don't mourn her.
Yeah. The bees don't care. They just kind of like say, oh, the queen is dead, long live the queen. They drag her out the front door and just throw her out. Really, once she's gone, they will then easily replace her. Yeah.
Instead of letting the bees create a new queen bee in the royal jelly, a beekeeper can actually ring up a queen bee breeder and replace her straight away. The new queen bee is actually delivered through the post. Yes, like Australia Post.
They put a queen bee in a cage with four maidens, so she's got four bees which will travel with her, and a piece of candy.
The queen bee has her maidens to look after her, feed her, and keep her company. And when they finally arrive at the hive, they can't actually be set free because the other bees will kill them.
So the cage has a little bit of mesh on there, and you put her in, and then she releases her pheromone, which then calms the other bees. They get used to her smell, and that candy is like a plug in the cage, and they eat through the candy. And during that time, they meet each other and they become friends. So they go express post, and it's the only time the post office will call you and say, your parcel is here, you can come pick it up now.
Queen bees can live up to 4 or 5 years, but worker bees will only live 40 to 50 days. And in their lifetime, they will make less than a quarter of a teaspoon of honey.
Research shows that a bee makes a 12th of a teaspoon of honey its whole lifetime. On average, I take about 55 kilograms from a beehive, but most beehives will take about 130.
The reason bees are always making honey is because they're stocking up for the winter. But in Australia, that winter never comes. And so I don't think it's really that bad we take their honey, because they're not going to be needing it. However, this won't stop them from working really hard. In fact, they even have some guard bees at the front of the hive that will stop the worker bees coming in if they don't have enough pollen.
On each beehive, there's guard bees at the front. And they kind of check in everybody who comes in, like they're on the door.
Sometimes the bees will go home to a different beehive.
We always thought that bees would be very specific on the beehives that they went to, but researchers suggested recently that they actually go on holiday. So they might go to a beehive in the neighbourhood and spend, you know, maybe 3 or 4 days with that beehive and then come back to their original beehive.
But she better take some nectar with her.
But if they haven't come with anything, the guard bees are more likely to turn her away.
Here's something I didn't know about why you might get stung by a bee.
If you look like a bear, you have a higher chance of getting stung.
Seriously,
if you've got a big woolen coat on.
Or maybe if you're really hairy.
Got big black fuzzy hair. I know a lady, she's got two dogs. One's black, shaggy, kind of stinky. And the other one's very pretty and white. And so the black one, unfortunately.
He always gets stung.
My fingers swelled up really quick.
It was horrible.
And but it itched. It's not really painful as much as it is just crazy itchy. And you just keep, it's like a mozzie bite in the same spot 10 times. You're just itching yourself. And you put cream on, you put anything on it, it doesn't work.
I remember I was in the pool and a bee landed on my boogie board. So it was all colourful, like a colourful boogie board. And I tried to flip the boogie board to drown the bee. And he didn't drown. When I flipped it back over, he stung me.
I think you looked kind of shocked that a bee had done this to you, actually. You felt aggrieved about that. I think, you know, the trust was definitely broken there. Definitely.
I'd like to thank Vicky Brown from the Urban Beehive Sydney for sharing all these wonderful facts and being part of this story.
All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories, and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney, in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find all of our episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe. We'll be back with new episodes in February.